You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as a brilliant Bernd Wiesberger claims the Aberdeen Standard Investments Scottish Open. And we'll get the inside track on his playoff win over Benjamin Hébert when Bernd joins us later in the show. Plus, we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour. And it's the biggest of them all, the 148th Open at Royal Portrush, Northern Ireland. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and alongside me I have former European Tour winner Richard Boxall and golf journalist Michael McEwen. Gentlemen, many thanks for joining me bright and early on this Monday morning. I must apologise for pulling you in early. Richard, you weren't up to anything else, were you, Monday morning early?
No, I made a beautiful roast yesterday.
Really?
While flicking between cricket and tennis.
And then the golf, obviously.
And then topped by the golf at the yes. very end. Mm. But I was out my rose early, 6 o'clock.
An early start is not an issue for you?
No, I don't mind early starts.
Now, I know an early start isn't an issue for Michael, because you are where exactly, Michael, at the moment?
That's a good question. I'm somewhere in the weird Bermuda Triangle of the west coast of Scotland, near Kilmarnock. Heading to Stranraer to grab the ferry to go over to Portrush for the Open. So outside what looks like a McDonald's and what may be a travel lodge. So
you're in your car though, are you?
I am, yes, I am. Beautiful. Safely ensconced, the door's locked.
Excellent stuff. Go on, Dan, you look poised to say something.
I was just about to say we'll talk more about
his car.
The Open Championship.
Oh, right, OK.
Not his car.
All right, OK.
A little bit later on the show. We've got to reflect on events at the Renaissance Course North Berwick and the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open. Bernd Wiesberger, yeah, taking the title thanks to a playoff victory over Benjamin Hébert. The pair had both finished on 22 under. Back in third, another Frenchman, Romain Langasque, on 19 under, with five players a further shot back and tied for fourth. They were Nino Bertasio, Andrew Johnston, Andrea Pavan, Andrew Putnam and Henrik Stenson. Wiesberger, Boxy, obviously the favourite going into the final round, two shots clear. But he could not have anticipated Hébert's final round 62, could he?
No, he wouldn't have. He wouldn't have seen that coming. I think if you said to him, you know, you're going to go out and shoot 69 when it's pretty benign conditions, even with a two shot lead, I don't think he thought he would be top of the pile or tied for top of the pile, to be quite honest. I think he still thought you'd need to shoot 67, probably. So you know, it surprises me that he was at the top with that sort of score. But no, Hébert. Climbing crack, I watched that. Bear had enough chances, and he had about three chances to take that just over €1 million first prize. But the putts he hit, they really for you know he's a great player, Benjamin Hébert, but his putts didn't even go close, did they?
I thought that maybe the chance had gone ahead of the final hole, but we'll get Michael McEwen's thoughts on it as well. Wiesberger stuck to his task, I guess, over the course of the final round. Michael, would you suggest?
Yeah, I think Boxy's right. You know, if you asked him at the start of the day, would he be happy with 69? I don't expect he would, given how benign the conditions were. But, you know, ultimately he ground it out and he got the job done. Maybe not in the most particularly beautiful and extravagant, polished way he would have liked. Of all the times to produce his worst round of the week, that probably wasn't it. But he got the job done in the end. He got across the line is probably about as fair as you can say. But it's just good to see him back. You know, Bernd had a tough few years, or certainly a tough last 18 months with injuries. And it was great to see him at the Maiden Denmark getting across the line there. And the Scottish Open now, it just makes you think, now that his injury problems are finally behind him, what's the future look like for Bernd Wiesberger? Hopefully only good things.
You know, I think only good things. He came down at the, where were we, Ryder Cup at Paris National. He was in the same hotel as us, Mike, and he was doing, he was up nice and bright and early like we were at 4 o'clock every morning, going to do some, I think he was doing radio. But that certainly, he got a crack on the whip there, pushed him back into action, which made him sort of think, actually, do you know what? I'll stick to golf rather than get up at 4:30 every morning.
How difficult, Boxy, is it coming back from a wrist injury?
I've never had a wrist injury, but I've had a leg injury. Obviously, I broke my leg, but we won't go into that because that's quite a long story. Unless you want to go into it.
But not today.
Not really, no. It's very difficult because I'll tell you what happens. If you don't play, the long game hitting the driver is fine because it's like riding a bike. The problem is you forget how to scrape the pedals around the corner. In other words, your short game goes, all the little tricky things. That's the problem. You know, you can stand up. And even now, after not really playing for 20-odd years, I can stand up and hit a driver and get it down there. But my goodness, when it comes to chipping, you get the sand arm behind the ball and you think, how is that going to fit under there without me taking most of the earth with it? Do you know what I mean? Or hitting halfway up it. It's all you feel, everything, all that side of the game goes. You know, you can stand on the range and hit balls all day long. It doesn't matter because you've got 1,000 chances. On the course, you've got one chance. And it's you need to do it in competition, and that's what you need to keep doing. And that's the difficulty when you come back. So, yes, he shot 14 under, won the Made in Denmark. That was fairly impressive. I was at that one. And then to come back and do this, it doesn't surprise me that he's won. I would imagine he probably will go on and win another tournament this year. But he's a, you know, from the time I met him, he's a really nice bloke. He's what I call salt of the earth, normal sort of chap, you know, likes to laugh and a joke. Bit like you and I, Mike.
Yeah, a bit like us. I totally agree. I mean, the dealings I've had with Berent has been, you know, absolutely brilliant to deal with, very down to earth. Doesn't give you the usual rehearsed answers that a lot of the very high profile players might give you. You know, he's very honest and humble, and you know, there's never been any doubt about the quality of his game. And you know, the injury that he had that set him back, you're just like, it's one of those ones that, you know, a guy that's that good and is that friendly and endearing, you don't wish any bad luck on him. So yeah, like I say, hopefully now that injury's behind him, he's back and he's winning again and posting some really good numbers, hopefully he can have a strong finish to the season, and who knows what next year's going to look like for him.
Mentioned the fact that Michael Ebert shot that 62 and, you know, Wiesberger would not have really seen that coming, but there was an awful lot of low scores out there over the course of the week. I thought it might get a little bit tougher on the final day, but obviously the Frenchman finding an awful lot of form.
Yeah, you know, I feel for Hubert a little bit. He'll probably wake up this morning and, you know, I doubt he's had the world's best night's sleep. He's probably been kicking himself and tossing and turning all night, thinking about what might have been. You know, and to shoot 62 in the final round of a tournament and not win it, it's going to be tough on him. But
plus, it's also quite difficult, Mike, isn't it, to sleep on €690,000? You know, when you stuff it into the pillow, it's really difficult to get your head flat, isn't it?
I can only take your word for that, Boxy. But look, you know, it just underlines for me once again how difficult it is to win a professional golf event and how difficult it is to win at the highest level. You know, Hubert's a class player. He's been around for a good number of years. He's, what is he, 32 now? I think he's won something like 6 times in the Challenge Tour, but
yeah,
he doesn't have a tour win to his name. And, you know, it's just really hard to win. I think we've been accustomed to seeing people like, you know, Tiger, and then going further back, you know, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, who made it look so easy and who seemed to win with such regularity that I think people forget that in golf, you lose a hell of a lot more than you win. And, you know, at the end of it, you can still look back and say, I had a phenomenal career. That's kind of where Hubert's at. Yes, you know, I'm sure he desperately wants that win, and I think history will judge him differently if he gets it. But it's just so tough, and certainly it's tougher when you miss the opportunities he missed yesterday. There were a good few chances that he had to get the job done, certainly in the playoff as well, where he just didn't convert when it mattered most. So I think that's probably what's going to eat away at him a little bit. But, you know, look, he has to take the positive, which is he shot 4 great rounds. His worst round of the week was a 67, finished up in 22 under par, had chances to win. You know, take the positives and try and just keep that momentum going into his next event, and maybe that'll be the one where he gets over the line.
Ultimately, it was a 3-putt from the Frenchman on the third extra hole that handed the title to Wiesberger. Obviously, Berent Boxy has got much more experience, and he'd just won in Denmark not so long ago. Was that a factor as well, do you think? We know he wasn't playing his best golf, but when you look at the playoff holes and the fact that Hubert bogeyed the 18th twice, I mean, it wasn't the best quality golf, was it, in the playoff? Do you think just that experience told in the end?
Probably did. I mean, here's the other thing. Hubert, when he kept missing those putts, I don't know, there wasn't loads of them, but there was 3, really, I would say. It was almost like he sort of smiled as if, oh, God. You know, there wasn't that oomph, you know, that, oh, God.
You're talking about the expectation to win, aren't you, I guess? It's like he's almost happy to be there.
Yeah, I think $1 million was certainly staring him in the face. I think that makes a big difference. You know, I think Benjamin Hubert will do exactly what he's done, shoot 62 or 63, and will win a tournament coming from about 6 or 7 or 8 groups behind.
Is that the way that he's going to do it? He's not going to do it from off the front?
No, he's had a few chances, Hubert, but I think that's the way he's going to do it. And yesterday, when I flicked back from, you know, the cricket, what was going on? It was a fantastic day of sport yesterday. But when I flicked back and I saw around a 62, I thought, you know what? He might just do it this week. But the problem with that is it wasn't windy enough. And if you're playing a resort course, the scoring is always going to be very, very low. So he might shoot 63 or 4 on a real tough course, come in, sit there and wait and pick it up that way. And then I would expect him to go on and win tournaments from the front.
Michael, what were conditions like? I know you were there earlier in the week in Scotland. I mean, watching on television, it looked very, very gettable. And courses like that, if the wind doesn't blow, there's not too much to them.
That's exactly it. I mean, the defence of, you know, the greatest links courses has always been the conditions, you know, Mother Nature, you know, wielding her oar and making things a little bit trickier for the guys. The problem last week or if you want to see it as a problem, was that we had unseasonably wet weather, which I know it sounds crazy to unseasonably wet weather in Scotland, but it was. I mean, the downpours at the start of the week were torrential. A lot of rain fell very, very early in the week, which softened up the greens. And there was no wind at all, which is completely unheard of. And certainly in East Lothian, you'd expect there to be at least 3 of the days where the wind's going to be blowing nice and strong. It just didn't happen at all. So combine the factors of soft greens, no wind, and a course that, let's be honest, it was set up to be reasonably gettable in any circumstances, because the last thing you want to do is beat up the players way too much before they go and play the Open Championship this week. So it was always going to be set up a little bit more gettable than maybe the people at the Renaissance would have preferred, or certainly we as the fans would have preferred. But three factors there that combined to just bring the scores right down. Now, is that a problem? Some people would say, yes, it is. Other people would say, no, it's not. It's a matter of personal opinion. It's quite a subjective thing.
Well, the cut, Mike, was, I mean, it was looking like it was going to be 6 under.
Yeah,
it was going to be on the mark at 6 under par, ended up being 5 under. What was it, 80 players that made the cut? But 5 under, you know, 80 players out of a field of, I wasn't there last week, but probably a field of 156 or 144, 100, getting the thumbs up from Dan, 156. You know, a third of them, more, not a third of them, half of them, 5 under par and better, over half of them. It's incredible.
Yeah, it truly is. I think something like 130 players of the 156 that teed up were par or better after a couple of rounds. You know, that's quite incredible. I do feel sorry for the guys that have gone home after shooting, you know, 4 under. I think that's, you know, quite a tough one to take. I'm sure it's a bitter pill to swallow. But it's just the nature of the beast. The circumstances were such that Mother Nature didn't play her part last week. Everyone else did. The tour did their job. The people at the course were great and, you know, did their part. Promoters did their part. The fans did their part. The players turned up and Mother Nature didn't. So,
well, there
just
was
one of those.
Yeah, no, it was. But there was 61 players on double figures or better under par.
Yeah, remarkable.
Incredible. But that's what happens, Mike, isn't it? You're up, you know, you live up there. You know what it's like. If there's no breeze, any course, you know, Muirfield's just down the road from there, isn't it? Muirfield would have been battered, you know, with no breeze.
No doubt about it. I mean, I'd love to know what the scores would have been around Muirfield under the same conditions. It would have been low. But yeah, you just don't get that kind of weather at this time of year or any time of year in Scotland. Lynx courses, the number one defence, really, let's be honest, is the weather.
Yep.
If the weather doesn't show up, then those courses are there for the taking.
What sort of use is it then to the likes of Matt Kuchar and Justin Thomas, who I presume, Boxy, come over to play a Lynx tournament to try and get themselves readied for the Open Championship? They do not want it that easy. How much worth is it to them having played this week?
I don't think it's massive worth. You know, they can play.
I mean, not that it's their fault, as we've just explained.
No, but you see, the thing is, that this is my view of looking at it, is that everybody's, you know, is a good player, and you're a good player because you swing it a certain way. It doesn't. The ground might change. You know, you might get Lynx ground, you might get inland, you might get American turf, whatever. The grass changes, the ground changes. But play. Go to Royal Portrush. Go last Wednesday and have 3 or 4 rounds, you know, up leading up to the weekend. Then go away for a couple of days, then come back Wednesday and have another round. You know, I personally think all this getting used to Lynx courses is, I don't go with that, to be quite honest. I think if you can play, you can play.
We're going to talk more about the Open and Portrush shortly. Let's get some social media reaction from Scotland. Nino Botasio saying, pleased with my week at the Scottish Open. The hard work is starting to pay off. Now looking forward to playing in the Open for the first time. The Open official account said, congratulations to Beef Golf, Ben Hebert Golf and Botasio Nino for qualifying for the Open. And Justin Thomas said, enjoyed the Scottish weather. Who knew Scotland had such great sunsets?
I certainly did. It's salt of the earth up here, a beautiful place.
Good on Justin for reminding the world.
Exactly. I have to Justin, actually, because, you know, a high-profile player like him, look, he didn't need to come over and play, but he did, and he was an absolute credit to himself, his family, to anyone who's got any association with him, with the way he handled himself throughout the week. He was brilliant with, you know, kids stopping and signing autographs, posing for photos. He was there at the Hero Challenge earlier in the week. He turned out he did everything that was expected of him and then some. He's a real class act, as Justin Thomas. I've got a lot of time and respect for him.
He's a good guy, isn't he? He came over to play the French Open last year, yeah, ahead of the Ryder Cup. He's one of those Americans that seems to get playing in Europe.
It did him a lot of good when he came over and played, you know, for the Ryder Cup. I think he was a top point scorer for the United States, I think, which goes to show, you know, have a few practice rounds around that course. He likes to travel, doesn't he? Which is great news. And why shouldn't they travel? I mean, these events, these Rolex events, eight of them, I mean, they're fantastic. I mean, how you could ever... I don't know if it's because I'm old and getting a bit fat now, but, I mean, I don't really understand how anyone could ever miss a Rolex event. If you're on the European tour, how could you say, well, I'm going to take that week off? I don't get that.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. And the events are fantastic. You know, there's a lot of money up for grabs, lots of world ranking points at stake as well. You know, Justin Thomas is doing the right thing, you know, and he's travelling the road that others have gone before. Patrick Reed, you know, he's been a great one for turning up for European Tour events and taking his membership and being prepared to travel. It was heartening, I think, to see a lot of Americans show up last week. And, you know, whether the preparation's ideal for the Open this week or not, I think it's going to bye-bye. It helps to bring attention to a really high-profile European Tour event, puts attention on Scotland, gets eyes of the world looking at the home of golf again. I'm all for it. Long may it continue.
Well, I'm pleased to say that we can talk to Bernd Wiesberger, winner of the Scottish Open. Obviously, it is the Open this week, so I'm guessing, Bernd, that the celebrations did not go long into the night last night.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, you can hear my voice is somewhat clear, so we didn't have too deep of a night. We had our early flight from Edinburgh over to Belfast, and we're actually on our way up to Portrush. So, yeah, the massive celebrations have to be pushed back a couple of days after the Open because, obviously, it's a big week coming up.
But very well done. Excellently played yesterday, 22 under par. That's some scoring. Tell me, having won in Denmark, 14 under, coming back this year and winning, and this one, which was the sweeter win out of those two?
That's a tough one. Obviously, each win brings great memory and great satisfaction. You know, I was in a tough spot early in the year. I didn't play great after coming back from injury. And obviously, the win in Denmark came a little bit out of the blue and it gave me massive confidence after playing really, really well. I was able to qualify for not only the US Open, but now also the Open Championship. So Denmark was a massive get-go for us in order to bring my game back to where I think it can be. So obviously, every win is special. Scottish Open, by far, the biggest event that I've won. But definitely, Denmark was like a kickstart for what has been a great couple of weeks and months now.
Yeah, well, listen, you're definitely at the top of your game, red hot at the moment. But for people listening, what is the difference between being in contention in a major and being in contention in a European Tour event? Can you explain that difference?
It's probably just sizes of the gallery to a degree, but you know, if you're in that position, it doesn't matter if you're playing, you know, a major championship or a European Tour event or any other golf tournament. You're only trying to do your best and win that or hit the best shot possible or get the best possible outcome, which is obviously would be winning. You learn over the years from experience you've had, and each time you're in one of them, it helps and therefore yesterday I was quite calm. I was trying to stay in the moment and trying to get the ball in the hole as quickly as possible. And yesterday was a little bit tougher, but you know, each experience in that position helps. And at the end of the day, it's 18 holes of golf, and you're trying to do your best. And it doesn't really matter if what the name on the trophy is at the end of the day.
When we were looking back at this event earlier in the show, we were suggesting that it was probably your experience that got you over the line yesterday. Benjamin Hébert, not won on the European Tour. Yes, he's won on the Challenge Tour. Shot a fantastic score yesterday. Wasn't your best day yesterday, but because you've got that experience, you know how to win, you managed to get over the line, and you said you stayed in the moment, and maybe that was the difference this time between yourself winning and maybe Benjamin Hébert winning.
Well, definitely wasn't my best day playing-wise, but there were a lot of other things that I think have been really, really on top of what I can do yesterday. I had a great warm-up session, and I felt really, really comfortable with my ball striking, which has been really good all week. And then you come out and you hit a few wayward shots, and it's not kind of going your way. So I really had to dig in there and try and get each shot out of those 18 holes that was offered to me, and it wasn't easy. So we were digging deep, we were grinding hard, and it showed that, you know, I was presented with like 8 or 9 footer on the last to actually make the playoff, and that kind of determination, not only for myself but also from Jamie and everybody who's happy to work with, you know, has put me into that position to be able to grind it out when it's not easy. You know, when it becomes hard, it's where it really shows what you're made of. And I'm quite proud of the way we handled it out there yesterday when things weren't coming as easy as on Friday or on Saturday.
Bern, I bet you, I was watching it on the TV, I bet you couldn't believe it when he missed that putt, when he was putting from behind the hole. I bet you thought it was all over then, didn't you?
When Ben missed the putt?
Yeah, when Benjamin did it. He had one from about 5 feet, it looked like, on the TV. I thought he was going to bury that all day long.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to take my head off to congratulate him before he's hit it. But,
no.
You know, I thought, I've tried to do my best. It's all I can do. I've hit a bad shot in the second playoff hole, and I wasn't able to get it up and down. And I've tried my best for the whole day and the whole week, and now it's out of my hands. And, you know, things happen. It's a very, very tough situation you see yourself in if you have to hold a 5 footer to win one of these events. And I feel for Ben because he's played a great tournament, a great day, and you take the chances when they present themselves. And you know, Ben gave me another chance there on the third playoff hole, and you know, I'm lucky to be able to have gotten into the position again, and then obviously take it when it was presented.
Yeah, well, you certainly did that. Bernd, we're going to leave the Scottish Open, we're going to leave the cricket, we're going to leave the tennis, and we're going to talk about the Open Championship at Portrush. Do you fancy your chances this week?
Yeah, I play pretty well as of late, so I'm looking forward to it. It's been two really, really draining weeks, obviously, if you contention up at these events, it tires you out, so I'm looking forward to have Stu Morgan with me this week, my performance coach, who's going to have to look after me on my energy levels. So we're going to keep quite mellow and slow practice procedure going into Thursday. So we try to taper it pretty well and have our energy back by Thursday. But I definitely look forward to play major golf this week for the last time this year. And, you know, I play well. If I can carry it over to another week, I definitely feel like we can have another solid showing.
Do you remember the last time that you played in Northern Ireland, Bern?
Yeah, I've only played once. I played at the Royal County Down at the Irish Open a couple of years ago, and actually was in a playoff there as well. Sean Kells took it from me and Eddie Pepperell. But yeah, Northern Ireland has been working well for me this one time I've been up there.
Do you feel comfortable on links courses? Obviously, you've just won in Scotland. To suggest that, do you enjoy the challenge? Do you think that your game suits what links golf has to offer?
I enjoy the variety of golf you have to play around those courses. I enjoy the creativity. It asks you the ball striking skills, the course management. You know, we play a lot of courses where you kind of always have to hit driver and get it still off the green and then catch it up and make it a putt show. So playing tricky courses where it's all about position and not getting too far ahead of yourself, I enjoy that the challenge, and also with the elements every now and then. So that's definitely something that is favoring my type of game.
Well, you've been playing brilliantly over the course of the summer with those two wins and a near miss in Ireland just the other week. You've been around very strong leaderboards. If you're not going to win, who do you think might win at Royal Portrush this week? Who should we have our eye on as well as watching you?
You know, I obviously have a major tournament. There's always a handful of guys who are there and about, but obviously I've said playing on somewhat his home soil on a golf course he's been very familiar with and had great success as a junior as well. I think Rory's going to have a really, really good week up there, crowds and everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if he is up there on the leaderboard come the end of the week.
And it won't be a surprise to see you amongst the leaders as well. We hope you have a fantastic tournament. We really have enjoyed watching you play over the course of the last week and the summer. Bernd, thanks for coming on the show again, and we'll speak again soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having
me. Cheers, Bernd.
Yeah, thanks for following.
Well, great to hear from Bernd Wiesberger. His form has been excellent, as we've been suggesting. Can he win this week, Boxy?
I think he's got a very good chance, yes. The only hard thing is, having won the week before, can you keep it all going? You know, he's been top of the leaderboard. And not from my experience of winning a Rolex event, although it is now a Rolex event, but while I won in Italy, the next tournament was the BMW PGA at Wentworth, and I could keep it going for sort of 2, 3, 4 days, and then the steam runs out. Whether the other players are different nowadays and can hang on is there to be seen, really. But no, yes, I think he'd probably prefer the Open Championship to be in a month.
I'm with Boxy, I don't see why not. The guy's riding some really hot momentum, he's clearly on form, he's feeling good about his game. There's just so many variables that go into winning a big tournament, but there's a lot to be said for confidence and momentum. It's got to be worth an extra couple of shots over the course of 4 rounds. So, yeah, why not? I think he's got everything going for him.
Well, one of the most popular players on the circuit is Andrew Beef Johnson, and for his supporters in the galleries, it was wonderful to see him challenge the leaders once again.
Yeah, what can I say? Got off to a quick start and kept it ticking away through middle round and stuff, and all of a sudden got into that back nine and made a real good run, and all of a sudden I was 7-8 under, and you know, had a couple good chances coming in, and I was like, well, let's try and take them and give it a best shot, and it was just one of them special days.
And the birdies just kept coming. What was your feeling when you were out there? Were you feeling under pressure that you just knew you had to shoot low? How did you go into it?
No pressure at all. Just went out, had fun, made a few birdies, and I was like, all right, let's try and keep same sort of mind, just stay relaxed, a few more comments, just stay chill, just keep doing what you're doing the right things, and yeah, just kept ticking along. So I just tried to stay that mind frame.
And for all of us, it's really exciting to see you find this form again. How special is it to you for a day like today?
Yeah, real special. I said I've worked really hard, so yeah, it's a nice feeling when it pays off.
And you must have been keeping your eye on that open space as well. How did that come into your mind when you were playing out there today?
You know, I said, because we went out early, I kind of just said, like, anything can happen with the other guys. So I kind of put it in the back of my head and didn't really think about it too much. Obviously, I want to be there, but it wasn't really on my mind. I was just like, what will be.
And as we said before, you have been really open about your struggles off the course. After this interview and after today, what is it that you want to go and do?
Just go and chill out, man. Yeah, that's it. Go and get some food, hang out, maybe have a beer.
Perfect.
He was very honest in a European Tour blog a couple of weeks ago, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Beef. And I'm really pleased that he's playing the Open. The fame that he got after playing so well a few years ago, it got to him a little bit. And on reflection, he has said that he would have done things differently.
I think definitely, yes. He, I first met him down at Leopard Creek. He's a lovely bloke. And he likes, like he says, he's going to have a beer there. He likes to have a beer. He likes to watch the football. You know, he's a normal person. And I think he was put under a lot of pressure. A lot was put on his shoulders sponsorship-wise. You know, he'd won one tournament. I think that weighed heavy on him. I really do. And I think if he hadn't had that put on him, I think he would have won more by now.
It's such a difficult thing to do, I would imagine, Michael, because you get offers to go and play in America, you get invites, you get sponsorships, you're a young man, you're making your way in life. It's difficult to turn them down, isn't it? And you want to try and please everyone, as he has suggested he tried to, probably to his detriment, and to see him emerge after this slump. I mean, it's good news for him, it's positivity for golf as well. But we did see him have a fairly bad time on the course over the last sort of 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's to see Beef turn this corner is incredibly inspirational. I think it offers a lot of encouragement to a lot of other people out there, particularly men who've struggled with mental health. And look, I'd kind of debated in my head, even up until the last few minutes when that first that clip about Beak went out, whether I was going to mention this or not. But, you know, I've struggled with mental health problems. And the reason that I debated whether or not to say anything about it was because it's a taboo subject. There's a real stigma around being a guy and admitting that you struggle with your feelings and emotions from time to time. You know, I've struggled with stress and anxiety on and off for a number of years. And yeah, but whilst I have it under control, it does tend to rear its head every so often. The difficulty is feeling that you're able to speak about it and to be open and honest about your feelings, because society tells you that's not what men do. You know, we have very high profile broadcasters who are out there saying that the best solution is to tell someone to man up. I mean, that's just about the most ignorant thing I think I've ever heard. I think that whether it's people like me or other people who have had issues and who struggle with these things, one of the things that gives you encouragement that it's okay and the confidence that it's okay to speak is hearing people like Beef, who are high profile figures in their fields, saying that they struggle. Because my goodness, if it's hard enough for somebody like me to speak about it, imagine how magnified it is when you have a legion of followers and a legion of fans, and to be honest, a massive audience of onlookers looking and staring at everything that you do from one moment to the next, you know, 365 days a year.
He won't be the only one in that field, you know. Let's cut this in half even. Of those 80 players that have made the cut, he's not the only one that's going through something like this. Because just to quickly say, the other thing is, someone's injured, you know, you can see there's a cut, there's a scar, there's a bump. But with the mental health problem, you look fine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you know what, the funny thing is, if you did see somebody with a cut and they were bleeding, you wouldn't tell them to just stop bleeding.
No.
But with mental health issues, I think a lot of the time people say, oh, come on, give yourself a shake or whatever. It just doesn't work like that. Again, it comes a little bit to the stigma of the word mental. You know, if you describe somebody as mental, as a lot of people do, then that's generally not a good thing. It's generally not a compliment. But mental health is health, regardless of anything else. You know, health is health, whether it's mental or physical. So I have nothing but the utmost respect for Beef. And look, this is a really important thing as well. When you see Beef, as a lot of fans have done over the past few years, you're seeing him for a couple of minutes at a time in a broadcast spanning 4 hours. So over that broadcast, you maybe see, 5-10 minutes of him at the very most.
Yeah.
5-10 minutes of somebody's life in a broadcast is nothing. It doesn't give you any sense of what that person's really like. It gives you no right to say what they're like or what they're going through. It gives you no, you know, platform to accurately describe their personality or who they are or what they do.
You know, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I get that same feeling when I sit opposite Dan here. You know, I only deal with him for 48 minutes. But I mean,
the nature of the sport, and it's an individual sport, you know, players, I guess, sometimes will travel on their own. They'll spend a lot of time on their own. They're away from the family. I thought there were some nice words from Henrik Stenson and Stephen Gallagher, Paul Waring, all talking about Beef Jones. I mean, I would imagine, Boxy, when you are touring, and it can be the same for journalists and for people who are on their own a lot and have to travel a lot for work, it can be a little soul-destroying when things aren't going right in other aspects of your life as well.
Oh, listen, if things are going wrong, you know, and most of the time it's relationships, Mike, you know what I mean? I won't go too deeply into it. But, you know, a lot of the time it's stuff that's going on at home, and if the stuff at home isn't good, the stuff on the course won't be good. It's a little different, I would imagine. I have never been a pro footballer, obviously, but in a game or tennis, in a game where it's quick, you know, you don't have a great deal of time. I might get slaughtered for this, but I would have thought you don't have a great deal of time to think about what's going on at home. You play golf, having done it for 40 years, you hit your tee shot, and then you've got however far you've hit it. Let's say you hit it 300. You've got 300 yards to think about, and you won't be thinking about the golf. You'll be thinking about what goes on at home, and then that's when it really gets you.
So true. That is absolutely spot on the money. And, you know, it's just such an unfortunate byproduct of fame, I guess. You know, a lot of people, this day and age, I sound like an old man. I'm only 35, but I sound like an old man, you know, just beleaguered with life. That's not the case at all. But you look at the modern world and it's so easy to be famous and to have people lavish you with attention and freebies and gifts and whatever else you want. It's there for the taking in a way that it never used to be. And I think it's so easy to get caught up in the trappings of success and the, you know, relative success or whatever it might be. It's so easy to get caught up in the trappings of what you do that you lose a little bit of who you are. And hopefully Beef's turned that corner. He's realised that the peripheral stuff, the superficial stuff that he perhaps enjoyed a little too much, it doesn't really matter as much as having happiness within yourself and contentment and enjoyment from what you do and who you are. So I loved the blog he wrote. I thought it was incredibly honest. It was seemingly honest, to be honest. And to see his emotions yesterday, look, I'm not going to lie, I had a lump in my throat watching his interview on Sky Sports, because that shows how much it means, you know. And so there's no cheating in the media centre. That's definitely not allowed, but I'll be rooting for Beef this week. I hope he does well.
Well, it'd be great to see him at the Open, and fingers crossed that he has turned the corner. Now, the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open attracted a stellar field, as we know, including former world number one Justin Thomas, who finished tied ninth.
Yeah, it was a good finish. I felt like through 11 holes, it was a very, very average round. I easily could have been 4 or 5 under, and I was only one. So I just try to stay patient, because I know that, I mean, literally every hole out here you can birdie when it's like this outside. So I was just trying to stay patient and kind of let good things happen, and then birdied 12 and then made that long putt for eagle on 14, and felt like I could, you know, maybe, you know, play the last 5-6 holes and 5 or 6 or 7 under and at least post something. But it was still nice to make a couple of birdies and get a respectable week out of it.
And what are your main takeaways from your time here at the Scottish Open? What have you learned the most about your game going into Ireland?
It's in a good spot. I mean, I'm playing well. My putter feels good in my hands again. I'm confident. I feel like I can hit the shots that I want to hit. But then again, this is these conditions. It's a lot easier to hit them in these conditions than it is in your normal Scottish or Irish weather, especially for next week. So I'm taking a lot of positives into it, but I have 3 days to kind of tighten things up.
Richard, we need the top 10 from the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open.
OK, here we go then. Top 10 tied 9th to 13th was Rafa Cabrera-Bello, George Coetzee, Jamie Donaldson, Lee Slattery and Justin Thomas. Then 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th was Henrik Stenson, Andrew Putnam, Andrea Pavan, Andrew Johnston, Nino Battassio. And then 3rd on his own was Romain Langasque. Benjamin Hebert and Bernd Wiesberger were both tied at 22 under par, but Wiesberger came out on top.
Last week's predictions, a reminder, the boys get 2 picks, 1 though. Had to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20. Minus 5 for a missed cut. Mr. Robert Lee Esquire went for Ricky Fowler. Minus 5 points for Rob. Tied 81st. Disappointing for Ricky. And also Robert McIntyre, who also was in a tie for 81st, therefore he missed the cut as well. Rob, who was in the presenter's chair, with a whopping minus 10. Thanks for that, Rob. Gordon Brand Jr. went Martin Keimer, who was tied 20th, gets 5 points for that. And David Drysdale, who was tied 78th, and he missed the secondary cut. I didn't realise that the European Tour had a secondary cut box. It's the old missed the cut, did not finish in the States. And
no,
it just been introduced for Rolex Series events? What? Tell me the story about this.
I'm sure if it's a field of 78 or over,
yeah,
they have a cut.
It's the secondary cut.
Secondary cut, but there's only 80. There's only going to be 2 players that missed it.
And David Drysdale
was one of them.
So we've put that down as 0 points. We've been kind on Gordy.
Still get the money. I might have.
Really? Yeah. Do you know, it surprises me that you know that.
Well, considering it's £8 million last spot or whatever it is. So
Jack Haywood, who was our guest, went for Matt Kuchar, who was tied 20th, 5 points. And Eddie Pepperell, who was tied 42nd, who gets 0. So presenters down to 145. Thanks, Rob. Co-presenters on 70. The guests go up to 55. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, you can get involved. Head to europeantour.com. Lee Findlay currently leads the global leaderboard. Awful lot of points up for grabs this week with the Open, of course. Race 2 Dubai, any movement when it comes to the top 10 in Europe? Boxy.
Yes, there has been a little bit of movement. Not massive. Ian Poulter's in 10th. Benjamin Hebert has leaped up into the top 10. He's at 9th. 8th is Xander Schauffele. Then we have the South African Louis Oosthuizen in his 7th. 6th is Kevin Kisner, who did the lead the way at the beginning of the season. Jorge Campillo, he's having a good year, he's 5th. 4th is Shane Lowry. Matt Wallace has gone from 1st, he's down to 3rd now. Actually, he went from 2nd to 3rd. John Rahm is now up to 2nd, but Bernd Wiesberger leads the way from Austria.
In other news, Steve Tiley claimed his first win on the European Challenge Tour with a wire-to-wire victory at Le Vaudreuil Golf Challenge. The 36-year-old held off compatriot Richard Bland to secure success on the Stayshore Tour. Congratulations, you're looking at me, Boxy.
Yeah, I just want to say Richard Bland.
What did I say?
No, that you did say Richard Bland. I was going to say how well he's playing this year on that challenge.
Oh, yeah, give Richard a plug by all accounts.
I've done. There
okay.
you go.
Need no to, more? Yeah. Okay. On the Stayshore Tour, congratulations to Jose Manuel Carillas, who posted a final round of 5 under par 67 at PGA Catalunya Resort to secure his maiden win on home soil at the European Tour Destinations Senior Classic. And across the pond, South African Dylan Fratelli secured the final entry to the Open Championship after his maiden PGA Tour title at the John Deere Classic, a two-shot victory ahead of Russell Henley. Are we claiming Dylan Fratelli as one of ours? I know he's South African, but he played in the European Tour for a few years.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Can we have him?
Good luck to him, but we are going to have him. Yes,
yeah,
he's one of ours.
Top 10 in the world, Mr. Boxall.
Top 10 in the world.
Mm, I know
There's
you've
not that sheet
you've
there.
Not, oh, you've not got the sheet with you, but why don't you just have a go?
All right, I'll do
have
it.
A go, have a go. Who's right. number one?
All right, hang on. Let me just
Come
have a
on.
Think about this.
Come
Top
on.
10 in the world. All right, I'll go 10th is Patrick Cantlay.
Hang on, let me see if I can find it first, and let's see if you can get it right. Let's have a look. This is live podcasting, everybody. Go for your life.
Patrick Cantlay, 10th.
Yes.
Justin Thomas, 9th.
Yes.
Have you got
a list there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Francesco Molinari, 7th.
I thought you were going to give it a go.
DeChambeau is 6th. Come on, concentrate, Richard. Tiger Woods, I think, is 5th. Justin Rose is 4th. Rory McIlroy is 3rd. Dustin Johnson is 2nd. And leading the way, hang on, Brooks Koepka.
Do you know, you could have done that so much better. And everyone would have thought that you're an absolute genius.
I know I could have done, but there's no point. It's like when you see something on tape and say, you might hold this, and then it goes in. That's
oh, hopeless. Really? Is it like when Sky show a shot from like someone in 51st position, you think, I wonder what happens here.
Going on.
Final day, yeah, what are they showing this for? Oh, he sold out.
Especially
from the fairway.
If we're in Scotland and it's somebody from Scotland.
Yeah, maybe.
Good Lord, I 35 feet away. Yeah, I got a funny feeling he might hold it. Good Lord, that's him 12 behind.
Time to preview the 148th Open Championship. It is the final major of the season. Boxy, that sounds odd to say, doesn't it, after all these years?
It does, yeah. In a way, I know it doesn't work because of the FedEx and all that, but, you know, it would be great if you could play the first one at the end of March, right, so which would be the Masters,
mm-hmm.
and then go on to US Open at the end of May,
mm-hmm.
Open, same spot, end of July, and then end of September, USPGA. Because now, which is great for the Masters, they've got 9 months of belting the Masters, you know, which is great for Augusta. It's fantastic. But it just seems 4 minutes ago, Tiger Woods won the Masters, and a week today, they'll all be over.
It's affected players' schedules as well, I think, hasn't it, Michael? Because there's a lot of players not playing in between majors. Tiger Woods, Francesco Molinari, and we saw it previously as well. You know, schedules have been altered because of the change of the Open, of the major calendar.
Yeah, it's really condensed the year. I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of this new calendar just yet. I guess we'll only really know in a few months' time, you know, when the Open's come and gone, and we're maybe 2 months into the 8 month build up towards the Masters, that we'll have a better understanding of how it's going to be in terms of how and where players will play, you know, August, September, October. I hope it doesn't create too much of a weird off-season. Obviously, we still have the Race to Dubai finales and the final series to look forward to there. So that will hopefully keep players playing. But I think 8 months of a build-up to the Masters is too much.
Yeah, in fact, it's 9, I think, isn't it? If we end this in the middle of July, you've got August, September, October, yeah. November, December, January, February, March. Yeah, it's 9.
Are you using your fingers to count that, Boxing?
I am. I was using my fingers to count that. But you see, I'm 58. So, you know, number one, biologically old enough to be your father, Mike, which is fairly worrying. But you know, I'm used to a red telephone box and all that sort of stuff.
So, therefore, you will remember the last time that the Open Championship was held at Royal Port Royal.
Well, it was 68 years ago.
I would imagine.
61 years ago.
68 years ago.
68?
Yeah, 1951.
Correct.
Won by
Max
Fastest
Faulkner.
Fingers first, Max Faulkner, yes, who took the prize that was that year.
£300.
It was indeed. You've done your research already, Boxy. Or did you just know?
No, I just know. Money isn't everything, but it's right up there with oxygen.
Indeed it is. What can we expect, Michael, of the course this week? Because the Irish Open was played there, what, in 2012?
There have been changes to the course. Could we see another low-scoring event like we saw in Scotland? Is the rough up? What do you know? What do you expect from Royal Portrush this week?
Well, the best way I can describe it, I had some time with Darren Clark and Matt Krahanish a couple of weeks ago, and nobody knows Royal Portrush better than he does. And he said it's going to be a very firm but fair test. And he said that if you just try and overpower the course, so if you're one of these guys that stands up and likes a bomb and gouge game, this isn't the week for you. You know, you're going to have to hit it straight because Portrush has a lot of very intricate dunes. So if you hit it offline, not only are you going to be in the thick stuff, the marram grasses that are so tight and you can really wrap around your club head and send your ball off in all directions, not only will you have that, but you're probably going to have quite an awkward, uneven lie for your second shot, an awkward, uneven stance, sorry, for your second shot. So this is going to be one of those weeks that I think that the guy that thinks his way around the golf course is going to be the guy that does the best. You know, so let's be honest, I think it sets up for somebody like Francesco Molinari again, who is a good driver of the ball. You wouldn't say he's one of the longest, but whilst he's added length, he is one of the most consistent drivers. His iron game is absolutely phenomenal. And if he has, you know, a week in the greens like he's become accustomed to having, then I would expect him to be up there. In terms of scores, is it going to be like Scotland? Nah, not a chance. Not a chance. You know, I think something close to double digits, 8 or 9 under, will possibly do it. A lot depends on the weather. I know it's a mixed forecast that we've got, but yeah, 8 or 9 under for me would probably do it, and somebody steady like Molinari to get the job done.
He's had a quieter season.
He has.
It's always going to happen, I guess.
He has, but it's his type of course.
He's not played since the US Open.
No, but he's not a massive hitter of the ball, which isn't going to be massive this week, but he is a good shaper of the ball, you know, and that makes all the difference. He's like the man on the end of a stick who swings it exactly the same every single time, which was a game called Pro Shot Golf, but we're not going to go down that avenue because I know what you're like, you get start laughing at that. So, yeah, Molinari. In fact, you know, Molinari might well defend.
Will brute strength be the same sort of asset this week that it usually is or not?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be a shaper of the ball that will do well this week. Somebody can move it left to right and right to left at will. I mean, we can all do that, sometimes not deliberately, but that's the secret. It's course management's massive. Go in any of the pot bunkers, you're lobbing it back out onto the fairway. If you could avoid the bunkers all the way around, you wouldn't be far off winning.
We've got one or two changes to the course as well, Boxy, haven't we? 17, 18 switched, changed.
Oh, yeah, 17 and 18, the old 17 and 18 when...
have gone.
Glad you said that then, because I thought, what on earth are you talking about?
Not for the first time.
No, 17 and 18 when Jamie Donaldson won. That now has become the Tented Village, from what I understand. And there's two holes from the valley course that runs alongside Portrush. Have been used. So, yeah, there's two new holes, but I don't think that will make a massive difference to scoring. 17 and 18 were two good holes, but admittedly, the old 16th, which is now the 18th, is still a very good finishing hole.
How much pressure will there be on the favourite, Rory McIlroy, Michael, this week, going back to play his home course?
Yeah, I think it goes without saying there's going to be an awful lot of pressure on him. I think that Rory, though, has become pretty good at dealing with pressure. I've seen a different Rory McIlroy this year. I think back to sitting in the media centre at Augusta, you know, just a few months back. He was so calm, so composed, and there was a different kind of maturity about Rory, I thought, then and that we've seen since. People have remarked since Rory first turned pro that he had an old head on young shoulders, which was intended as a compliment and, you know, it fully meant the right way. But I've seen a change in him in so much as he now looks comfortable in his own skin, doing his own thing and not really letting golf define him.
Has that affected his play a little bit, though, Michael?
No, not at all. I think Rory's had a great year. I think his results might not necessarily have reflected that, but I think if you ask any player or any of the guys in the top 100, I reckon 90 to 95 would take Rory's season over theirs at this moment in time.
A lot of people would take it as a career, trust me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I think we judge Rory to a different standard than a lot of other players because of everything that he's achieved in his career so far. And, you know, he's one leg short of the career Grand Slam at the age that he is at 30 years old. That's just phenomenal. So, yeah, going back, there's going to be a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation on him, but I fully back him to handle it in the way that perhaps I wouldn't have a year ago.
Thoughts on Rory this week? Foxy.
I think Rory will do fine. I think he'll be a top 10 finisher again. Do I think he'll win? I don't think he'll win this week. No, I just think he'll feature. I think he'll be up there. He might win. He might prove me wrong. I mean, you know, he's a great player. He could possibly win, yes. if you're asking, do I think he'll win? I've got my.
Have you got your shortlist? He must be on your shortlist.
He's on my shortlist, yeah. I got about five people that you think will win, and then another sort of one as an outsider.
There's going to be an awful lot of pressure on Rory McIlroy, as we know, at Royal Portrush. Does the same apply to Graham McDowell? He's done brilliantly to get to the Open Championship. I thought he got in with his win on the PGA Tour, but he didn't. He had to qualify, and he did really well. I think he qualified at the Canadian Open, didn't he, to get in.
Hold a long putt to get in there.
And he did a very nice blog on the European Tour website. Go back and have a look at that if you've not read it already. He says, to see the Open being staged in Northern Ireland is mind-blowing for so many local people. I mean, he feels it. He was desperate to get there. It's going to be great for him, going to be great for the area.
Oh, it'll be fantastic. You know, we 2 weeks ago, we were actually in Ireland, and the way they set out the streets and everything, it was fantastic. The reading that I've been having and the chat that's been going around is that they will really, the Northern Irish people will really take it to heart. They'll love it. Absolutely love it. Great for the area as well, tourism-wise.
I'm getting at your predictions in a second.
Righto.
I want both of your thoughts on Tiger Woods this week, boxing.
Tiger Woods is apparently getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning to prepare for jet lag, which is something that he said didn't exist when he was playing well and winning all those majors. He normally would come over and play a couple of courses in Scotland or Ireland before he went on to play wherever the Open Championship was being played. Hasn't done that this year, so I would presume he would have got here yesterday, I would have thought. Maybe Saturday, and then start having his practice rounds. But, you know, as you get older and older, you just can't do... Trust me, Mike, this will happen. You just can't do what you used to do.
Is he a bit undercooked, potentially? Hasn't played since the US Open. Didn't play between the Masters and the PGA. Missed the cut in the PGA, Michael?
I think he's undercooked. I don't like the fact that he hasn't played. I think that, you know, you need to get the competitive reps in, as Tiger himself would say. So I don't like the fact he hasn't played, that he hasn't got himself some competitive golf. But I will say this, the last time the Open Championship visited the venue that no one had seen in a generation, he won it at a canter. I think, you know, not a lot of people learn courses as quickly as Tiger Woods does. So is he going to win? Nah, not for me. I think he'll finish top 10, but I don't see him winning.
What about Brooks Koepka, who is the man for the majors, Boxy?
To me, yeah, I think he might win. I think I've got a feeling Brooks Koepka will win. What's he gone? 1-2, 1-2 in his last four. That's quite good, has to be said. I think it's his sort of course. He's strong enough. He's a great shaper of the ball. Course management, I promise you, course management is massive. It really is. It makes such a big difference. And that's just something that I think Brooks Koepka has got plenty of. So he's got... Are you asking me for my pick now?
Not yet. I want to mention one other player.
Because there's another one.
Okay. Michael, give us your thoughts on Dustin Johnson.
Oh, where to even start? Dustin Johnson, for me, he's in very great danger of becoming a bit of a flat track bully. He's won so many times in the PGA Tour. He's got a great CV. Give that to most golfers and they would bite your hand off for it, but he has one major. There's something about him that, for me, I'm not convinced he's going to add to that haul either. He's got everything to suggest he should. He's incredibly talented, prodigiously long, and when he goes in a hot streak with the putter, my goodness, he's tough to beat. But I just can't get my finger on what it is that he's not bringing to the table at a major. So for me, this week, no, I don't see it at all. I think that Portrush is going to be a conundrum. It's going to be a bit of a monkey puzzle to him. I just don't see him getting the job done at all.
Justin Rose, Boxy, your thoughts on him?
Always up there, always in with a shout. A rare man to sort of miss the cut in big events. So I would say, again, top 10.
Okay, let's get some selections then. We're allowed two this week, and we are allowed to pick anyone in the field, not restricted by our usual Race to Dubai top 50 from the previous year rule. So, Michael, two to follow for the 148th Open Championship.
Two Americans from me. First of all, as boring as it might sound, world number one, Brooks Koepka. He's got a Portrush man on his bag, Ricky Elliott, who, again, a bit like Darren Clark I mentioned earlier, probably no one's going to know the course as well as him. I love the way Brooks putts. I think so much is said about the fact that he's massive off the tee, but his putting is absolutely sensational. And from a journalistic point of view, I love the idea of going to the Masters next year with both he and Rory trying to complete the career Grand Slam at Augusta. So that would be a great storyline. He works the ball great both ways. So Brooks is the man to beat for me. And even though he missed the cut at the Scottish Open, Ricky Fowler is my other guy, a phenomenally good links golfer. First saw him in Northern Ireland, funnily enough, at Royal County Down in the 2007 Walker Cup. So at home straight away. 18-year-old kid just knocking the ball around beautifully, shaping it every way he had to, using his imagination. Ricky is the most Scottish-American golfer I think I've seen in a very long time. So for me, Brooks to win and Ricky to contend.
Boxer, who'd you like this week?
I like Brooks Koepka and Ricky Fowler, I think. No, I won't use that. No, I have to agree with you with the first one. Brooks Koepka, 1-2, 1-2, last four majors. That's position, that is, first, second, first, second. He's just, for me, he's a good, solid all-round player. And as I was talking about earlier, his course management is excellent. So that's him for me, without going on about him too much. And my second one to go for... it's an outsider, but it's a man.
Sounds like you're making up as you're going along, Bacon.
Not really. It's a man with a 1,000-yard stare, which I think is what you need in this game, and that is going to be Matt Wallace, who is now third on the Race to Dubai. He was leading it for a while. He's got Dave McNeely on the bag. That's pretty good. And if you're a gambling man, which I have every now and then, I suppose, an each way bet. We're not allowed to bet on the golf though. So for anybody listening, Matt Wallace would be a very good each-way bet, I think.
Has he got the temperament to win a major?
Yeah, I think he has. I think he's shown that he's right up there. What he has shown is, you know, like when he tried to get into the Ryder Cup and he was seriously unlucky not getting picked. I did stand next to him in Crom when the announcements came out. He was watching it on a phone. And I said, unlucky. He said, no. He said, I knew I wasn't going to get it anyway, so I just wanted to see who was picking. But... when he needs to do it, he's got it. He's got that, as I say, he's got that 1,000-yard stare. He's a gutsy player. And the money now is beginning to get not too much of a problem for him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't think he worries too much about the dough. Mm. So there you go. That's my two.
My selection is John Rahm, who was third in the US Open, second in the Andalusia Masters, and, of course, a winner in the Irish Open. Fantastic Lynx player. Only a small sample size for his Lynx performances, but always seems to play well. He's done well in Ireland in particular, of course, and did win the pairs event on the PGA Tour earlier this season. So I'm going for John Rahm as my main selection, Boxy.
He makes me chuckle, you know, Michael, when he comes up with these selections. Puts his neck right on the block. It's really fantastic.
Hey, listen, I've gone for Rahm. You two have gone for Koepka.
Koepka, yeah. No, we've gone for Koepka.
And my second selection, and you'll like this one, Brooks Koepka. You'll like this one, Boxy, is Patrick Reed.
Yeah, no, I don't get that.
No, I know you don't, do you? He's playing a little bit better. And I know you're a stats man, Boxy.
Not.
His strokes gained, teacher green stats, have been much improved over the past month. Rahm and Reed for me, Michael. Give me some love, because Boxy
Michael,
isn't.
This strokes gain business, trust me, doesn't flow with me.
You know what? I'll give you Rahm. I like Rahm. Patrick Reed's...
We'll see.
I've not seen it.
We will see. Well, we will see.
You've seen something a little glistening
from
the front of a computer screen somewhere.
Less of that. Listen, it's Rahm and Reed for me. We will see who comes out on top over the course of the week. That is it for now. Next week, we will have a full review of the Open. Plus, we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, which is the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via europeantour.com and the official app, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But for now, from me, Dan Roebuck, from Richard Boxall.
Bye.
From Michael McEwen.
Cheerio.
Hopefully you get your ferry, Michael. And from me, it is goodbye. We'll see you soon.